Hello, I'm Luke Halpern from Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus. The Pharmacy Times Pharmacy Focus podcast provides the latest industry news and information, thought leader insights, clinical updates, patient counseling tools, and innovative solutions for the everyday practice and business of pharmacy. Today's episode is a timely one, coinciding with World Psychedelics Day, which falls on June 20th. Psychedelic medicine is having a real moment in the United States right now. Compounds like psilocybin and MDMA are moving through late-stage clinical trials. There's been executive action at the federal level aimed at accelerating these treatments for serious mental illness, and state-level programs are beginning to take shape. But so much of the conversation around psychedelic-assisted therapy has centered on therapists, psychiatrists, and prescribers. And today, we're going to talk about where pharmacists fit into that picture. Joining me are three leaders from the Psychedelic Pharmacists Association, who are here to talk about something brand new: the recent formation of the Psychedelic Pharmacists Foundation, the PPA's 501c3 charitable and educational arm. We'll dig into why that distinction matters, what the foundation is setting out to do, and what this growing landscape means for pharmacists who want to get involved. Before we fully dive in, I'd love for you to each briefly introduce yourselves and just share what drew you personally to the work of the Psychedelic Pharmacists Association and now the foundation.
So my name is Jason Burge, and I'm a nonprofit consultant, strategic consultant, and specialize and focus within the psychedelic healing arena in the burgeoning community and industry. I run the Psilocybin Assisted Therapy Association, and I've been involved in many other psychedelic nonprofits. Really, what drew me to the Psychedelic Pharmacists Association from the beginning is that both of our organizations started around the same time, and so I've been involved with them as partners. And then as they've been growing and expanding and decided to move into the foundation with my knowledge of, you know, running more operationally, how to start nonprofits and how to get them functioning and up and running, really was just a great collaboration for all of our efforts that, you know, pharmacists can focus on what the information about being a pharmacist. I can focus on, hey, what do we need to get an organization up and running? And psychedelics for mental health really matter. That's why we're here ultimately, is that all of this is that we believe, or I believe, you know, thoroughly, that these substances can really have an impact on our society and on healing and really trying to overcome the mental health crisis that, you know, our nation and the world is currently experiencing.
I'll go next. I am MG Hornick. I am an associate professor of biomedical sciences at Roosevelt University, the College of Science, Health, and Pharmacy. And I've been teaching in the pharmacy program for about 7 years at this point. And sometime around, I don't know, I want to say January, February of 2019, one of my coworkers handed me Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind. Read that, fell in love. I already had a strong predilection for neuropharmacology. And that just really kind of opened up where I wanted to go with my research and with everything that I was focusing on. And so in January or December, actually, I want to say, of 2020, then I decided to take what I had learned with all of my knowledge, just diving deep into that rabbit hole, and created an elective for pharmacy students, because it became very apparent at that point that the students were either participating in these drugs or at least knew people who were, and they were going to need to know things like drug-drug interactions, what are these doing for their patients, what could they possibly do negatively for patients. But the main focus was kind of attacking that stigma and saying, this is how these drugs work. And so with that, I also, from another colleague, introduced me to the PPA. I joined and became part of the education committee, and then became a board member for the PPA. And then was, once we transitioned to the foundation, education kind of moved over there, because that's my whole thing, is getting this out not only to pharmacists who are currently working, pharmacy students, but also to the public.
My name is Will Senaway, and I've been serving as treasurer of the PPA now for over 2 years. I'm based out of Pittsburgh, and I spent my career working in as a pharmacist in the managed care space. As for my interest in psychedelics, I just kind of stumbled across it a few years ago. I think I saw a podcast with Roland Griffiths, and then I read the same Michael Pollan book that MG just talked about, and just was completely blown away by, you know, the results that people were seeing in comparison to what the current mental health treatment landscape is. I felt like this had to be the newest front, you know, and best frontier in the space in a long time. So I wanted to get involved. Fortunately, ran across a colleague here in Pittsburgh who was a former member and co-founder of the PPA, and he encouraged me to join. So I got involved then and signed up to be treasurer, and here I am.
Excellent. Well, thank you all so much for being here today. I'm really excited to hear what you all have to say and all of your amazing insights. So we can get right into it with the formation of the PPF. So we're going to start with Jason. The Psychedelic Pharmacists Association is already established as a 501c6 trade organization. Why was it important to also form the Psychedelic Pharmacist Foundation as a separate 501c3? And what does that distinction mean practically for the work that you're able to do?
As a nonprofit consultant, you know, particularly within the psychedelic industry, is that, you know, following them for years and really on what they're advocating for, and then seeing them decide to, you know, explore this option of the foundation, which is the 501c3. So it allows for charitable giving, whereas trade associations don't. They're more focused on, you know, on the profession and how do they support pharmacists in the profession for what they're doing, you know, specifically with psychedelics and their role within it. So to me, this was like, wow, this is an organization that is doing it the right way by staying in compliance. And we are a professional organization. All of us here are professionals, and to bring in more professionals and to continue on with funding to be able to continue on all of this work that we're doing, this is a smart way of combining and creating a partnership while allowing for both organizations really to stay compliant and stay focused on where they want to be. With the foundation, our primary goal, and this is why Will and MGD and the rest of the team is focusing on the education, because that's what's going to help propel this knowledge base. And it's also the education that we can be going out there for the community at large. And so that's what we're really talking about, is like, how do we help the pharmacists be able to do their job better, but for the community out there that needs the healing? And that's where the charitable component and really having the education based in there is that how can we support this to make sure that this is accessible for everybody, and that it shouldn't be a programs, or it shouldn't be information that should always be held behind, you know, big pay gates. How do we ensure that there's equal representation of, you know, that your pharmacist that you would see is the person that you would like to see, and that could also mirror what you need are as an individual to get the proper education so that those individuals can be informed on moving forward. And educate and empower is really strong with both the foundation and the association, because we're in the very beginning stages of all of this movement. So a lot of it is like, we need more education for the individuals, for the professionals and the community to make their own distinction about how they want to be involved. And so the creation of the trade association, the Psychedelic Pharmacists Association, to support kind of like the business professionals, and then the foundation to focus on education and bringing in charitable income to support the overall movement, it's the way that we need to go. And it really is going to be instilling the success that we can be around, and that we have the knowledge, you know, not only operationally, but within the industry to make this successful in the long term. You know, this is a multi-year, you know, projection that we're on.
Yeah, you said it in great terms there. And I really couldn't agree more. And I also want to, you know, on the subject of the PPA, I want to go back to the founding of that itself. So this one is for all three of you. Could you walk us through what the formation process of the PPA looked like? Who came to the table? What was the vision? And how did each of you come to hold your role within the PPF?
Sure. I could give a little bit of background on that I've been involved in the strategic planning with both the association and the foundation. the PPA came about from some pharmacists who really were the same ideals of wanting, how can we turn this into a professional industry to really make the knowledge out there for pharmacists to better their careers? And Kevin Lanzo was, so he was really, you know, one of the main visionary founders of the organization. And what he wanted to do was be able to open up this as an option for pharmacists to understand of how they could contribute with healing, particularly if they didn't want to be a part of what the mainstream, you know, Western, you know, Western medicine approach would be. That here's some alternatives, because noting that many pharmacists were going into, you know, they go into the career and can get tied down by the nuances of it really be, you know, of the Western society of insurances and whatnot. And so noticing that not only how they were feeling professionally of being engaged within, you know, or being limited by how they could approach other alternative mental health options, but also as here's an option that could help you develop and become a better pharmacist, that this could help you become, you know, a side job. It could help your career. And conversely, for what he calls is like people that may be more radical and that want to, you know, push the boundaries in educating, is also how can we teach the pharmacists, if they're in more of these, you know, grounded, you know, in insurance, you know, working with larger organizations, how could they adapt this to the current model? So really about how can this be in addition to and adapt for the current models to really support the pharmacists, their own journey throughout this, you know, is that you don't have to, you know, be like, oh, I'm all for psychedelics to be a part of the association or to have this knowledge. And so what they really formed on was in the beginning of that passion and the vision, and that still carries through today into what now, as you know, the association has been going on for years in developing the foundation, that we're still based on those core things of how like a multi-prong approach to coming up to the same solution. And you know, starting a new organization is very ups and downs. You know, there's a lot, you know, people come in, you get passionate, you burn out about it. And so that's what operationally, like we're really working on is, you know, how can we, you know, keep on these visionaries, but not have it just be, oh, Kevin and these other folks. And even, you know, Will coming on, you know, with Will coming on, you know, being involved for several years and bringing that passion, but then how can we keep it sustainable for the long run? And that's what I've really seen the adaptation of the founders and all the pharmacists on the board of, you know, instilling this for the long run, so it's not going to go away.
And that's just great to hear how you've stuck to those core values throughout all of these changes. And that was just a great explanation. So thank you, Jason. And we could shift gears a little bit now to talk dollars and cents. For this question will be for Will. So as treasurer of the PPF, you're stewarding the financial infrastructure of a brand new 501c3. What are the PPF's funding priorities right now? And how are you thinking about building a sustainable financial foundation for this work?
Yeah, thanks, Luke. As much as it's about dollars and cents, I think it really the ultimate thing there is really about delivering value to our members and the community through the content that we can create. So in terms of our short-term funding priorities, you know, we want to raise funds to build out our first and publish our first continuing education course on psychedelic therapy. And, you know, we have experts within our organization, as well as through our partners and advisors, that we are confident we can deliver best in class educational content out there. And, you know, we think that we feel strongly that there's enough people out there who are going to find value in that they'll want to, you know, want to take the courses, donate to the organization, to be part of this movement, not only for their own benefit to continue receiving better and better courses as we grow, but also just to help, you know, be a part of bringing about what the vision of making a better mental health landscape in our country. So, you know, we're confident there's a lot of people out there that will want to support for that.
Excellent. And I feel like the movement is only growing towards that support that you're talking about.
Yeah.
So now we could zoom out a little bit from the organization itself and look at the bigger picture of the psychedelic landscape and the pharmacist's place in it. So we're recording this to coincide with World Psychedelics Day on June 20th. So Jason, when you look at where psychedelic medicine stands in the United States right now, with compounds and late-stage trials, executive action at the federal level, and state programs beginning to form, how would you characterize this moment? And what are the biggest open questions for pharmacy specifically?
Yeah, great question. And the exciting part, and is also the could be part of the most challenging, is that we are all pioneers, you know, in this, in that we're literally building the plane as it takes off. And we've been that way since Oregon came online, you know, many years ago, or really, you know, when PPA started at the onset of Oregon, when the beginning of Oregon Psilocybin Services, and really the board that started before them. So there's so much knowledge that we don't even know yet, but it's about how can we continue on with this vision? And these regulated programs that are developing are really great. There's still a lot of hurdles that we need to overcome. You know, there's a lot we've talked about, stigma, and just how do we get the knowledge that we have, you know, as industry leaders to everybody, regardless of where you're at within the country. You know, this is a movement that isn't just like, oh, this is in the places that are going to be most accessible to psychedelics. It's like, no, this is what should be available for everybody. And that's where the role of the pharmacist come into. And through the years in the exploration, and really what I learned from the PPA is the vital role that pharmacists play in this as the care team, and that nobody has all of the knowledge. And that for somebody to really get what they need for their mental health, the pharmacist can be so vital in that. Because some of the challenges to the regulated environment, you know, that you have great safety precautions and, you know, how it's set up, but they're not medical models. New Mexico's model will be clinical, but that's still developing. You know, Colorado and Oregon's models are very based on informed consent, and you can include therapy in there, but it's not, it can be therapeutic, but in itself is not. And so when people are coming to learn about this brand new, and for many of the folks, it's like, who does this really matter for? It's the people that have the most harm to lose, or the most to lose in this, that has severe traumas, that the, you know, particularly somebody that maybe has been on SSRIs for 20 years. How are they going to get that knowledge so that they can utilize this and learn about it? And the pharmacists really play a key role because they're the ones that can really know about these drug-drug interactions. And can alleviate some of the pressure from, you know, medical doctors, DOs, you know, anybody else that would be in that primary care role. Because not everybody wants to talk about this with their primary care providers. You know, is it going to be recorded? Nor do all of these primary care providers have the details on the compounds, on the interactions of it, whereas the pharmacists do. So this should be a regular part of like, hey, talk with your pharmacist about this because they can give you more detailed information. It's not up to the therapist. It's not up to the guide. You know, the doctors know a limited amount. So being a part of that, regardless of how they feel, really is going to help the seekers, the clients out there be able to function and make their own choices around it. You know, of how they want to address those, you know, those things, because it is serious. There are drug-drug interactions. Not all the psychedelics are the same. And that's where the pharmacists really understand is that, you know, taking psilocybin versus taking an ayahuasca or ibogaine are very, very different. It's not just commonplace throughout. And that's the specific knowledge that pharmacists can bring and just makes them a part of it. And that's what we're encouraging.
Absolutely. And you did a great job explaining why pharmacists do fit into this. And my next question was going to basically a continuation of this prior question, and anyone can jump in here. So like we were mentioning, it conversation around psychedelic assisted therapy has largely centered around therapists, psychiatrists, and prescribers. So Will or MG, you could jump in on this subject of where the pharmacist fits in, and then anyone could offer any insights on what does the PPA and PPF believe that the profession stands to lose if pharmacy doesn't assert itself now?
Yeah, well, exactly as Jason touched on, you know, as medication experts, we definitely feel like pharmacists are the best position to be a part of the care team. And in terms of screening for and counseling about drug interactions, talking to patients about those things. I also think a lot about the community pharmacists, the, you know, vast majority of which will never work in the psychedelic space in any meaningful way, but will definitely get questions as these drugs are approved. You know, it's often said that the pharmacist is the most accessible healthcare practitioner because they're at every grocery store in the country, you know. So I think it's critical for pharmacists to be well educated about this so that they can have stigma-free conversations with curious patients and, you know, let them know the significant difference between medicating with these products at home versus being in a treatment program with a proper protocol and the set and setting that is necessary for this healing to take place. So, you know, really getting the word out on that, I think is super important. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure MG or Jason could talk a little more about this, but just, you know, the risk of not being involved now is just getting left behind as new regulations and guidance is coming out. And we want to make sure that our voice is heard so that the decision makers know, you know, how important it is to have us at part of the care team. So.
Yeah, I'd like to add on to that, that you both put it wonderfully is, you know, we are the drug experts. Pharmacists are the drug experts. They are the most accessible healthcare providers out there for a majority of communities. And they are very trusted in those communities a lot of times. And so when you're considering, particularly with new legislation that's getting passed, new programs that are being put into place, whether that's for research or for straight up, you know, clinical therapy, these things are, they do require a pharmacist or a drug expert to be there as part of that safety protocol in order to say, hey, this is how you need to screen patients. This is the sort of advice you need to give them. This is the information you need to give them in case they are on any of these other psychoactive drugs or have this condition or that condition. And I just like to add on to that, that as someone who does teach pharmacy students, in addition to just they definitely know people who are trying these on their own and, you know, they come to me with questions, and but a lot of them are also very, very dedicated to mental health in their own right. And they are curious as to, is there a path for me? Is there a path for me in this space? And by getting in on that ground floor, we ensure that there is a path for them in that space. Because otherwise, there are very few residencies out there right now for pharmacists and pharmacy students who even just want to go into the psychoactive space, whether that be SSRIs or psychedelics or anything of that sort. So by kind of getting our foot in the door, we're kind of opening that space for them and saying, yes, there is a purpose for you in this pathway, and you might have to carve it out at this point. But if we carve that out, that will open the door for future pharmacists as well.
Yeah, well said. With all of that, you know, this whole movement around psychedelic healing, it's all about, you know, going broadstream and going across the, you know, the nation. And it's all a when, it's not an if. This is all coming. And so the more people can get involved now, not only could it, you know, benefit you in your career of being, you know, how exciting is it to be at the very beginning of a brand new, like, whole realm? That is super exciting. You know, this is the time to get onto it. So people being able to know that, you know, that this is all coming down the road. So might as well get, you know, if you can get advance of it, you're really helping out. And one thing that's, I think that also this, all of this education and just, you know, is not only engaging the pharmacists of being a part of it, but it's also letting them know, like, these are high pressure jobs, you know, what, you know, they're kind of secondarily also learning about that this could help them. This could help them when they reach that burnout. That so it's like not only helping the community, this is going to be helping them to decide, oh, is this something that I could deal with? If I'm dealing with burnout, if I'm tired of this system, I came in there wanting healing, and now I'm so tired of the insurance system or whatever it is that may be, you know, they'll have those tools as well. So it's kind of like this is another dual prong approach that allows for greater healing to really help the broader society as a whole.
100%. And I think all of these points are great to consider for listeners, because like you mentioned, Jason, this is all coming and there is momentum, a lot of strong momentum at the federal level. So this question can go for any of you. President Trump did sign an executive order in April to accelerate psychedelic treatments for serious mental illness. What's your read on how that federal momentum or potential friction could shape the regulatory environment that pharmacists will ultimately be practicing in?
I'll jump in. This is a loaded question. So I will just say, there have been slight movements before from various positions. Obviously, this is coming all the way straight from the president as an executive order. But until we see actual action and actual bills being moved forward or a drug getting approved by the FDA, there's only so much we can do at this point. And to prepare pharmacists is really just getting them that knowledge. Now, on if we move to a less than the federal level, but to the state level, we do see, dozens of states who are pushing these through the legislation, whether it be for research, whether it be for actual clinical studies, whether they, flat out decriminalize and approve natural medicines like Colorado. So it's out there. People are aware that people are taking it. And basically, for us, we need the pharmacists to have that knowledge so that they can help those patients and understand what they're doing and how they can actually be helping themselves and what the potential consequences are for this. But as far as, kind of, it's nice to see the momentum, but until there's actual action, it's really hard to do anything other than just prepare the pharmacists and the pharmacy students for this, as well as the public.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and if I may, the exactly what MG said, and that this going back to this is the long-term goal with this, and that all of these are really baby steps in what we need. With every benefit, there's also I've noticed within the spaces also comes some complications. So it's great to have more awareness out there. But that further puts the value of why we need to be doing what we're doing, why we have, MG as an educator, why we have Will as, as a pharmacist that's out there that's doing this, Kevin and, the vision that came out there, is that this doesn't resolve a lot of the issues. It just kind of takes another step, but we have a lot more that we have to be doing after this. And the one of the potential challenges is that in this process, how do we as an industry or as a community or as a movement, however we want to, phrase it, don't also give this over into, the realm of the pharmaceutical companies where then they're making all of the choices that can impact then downstream, the advent of bringing on synthetic versus, natural products. So there's complications with that, but all of those questions are really all of those things that bring up are really what we need because we need to have that, and hopefully we can continue on with the education and have the difficult questions of like, yeah, there are risks with this stuff, and there are things that can happen, but the more that we offer, the more research that we can have, but also we need to be empowering on the grassroots of this is also what's happening outside of just on these high levels. How can we bring this isn't brand new. This just didn't come around 5 years ago. This has been around for thousands of years. So it's, it's all of that process and it's really exciting. It'll be great to see what else is coming down the road. And I'm sure there'll be a lot more hiccups and there'll be a lot more obstacles we'll overcome, but it's just continuing on. Because we're really on like a 10-year, I think, is a 10-year trajectory of really getting something that's going to be completely open and completely available. But in the meantime, it kind of puts it more within the medical realm, the Western medical realm, which is why also the pharmacists need to be more part of this because it's not bypassing that, which really is a safe route. I mean, this is going to be a slow route, but it really is going to be a safe route on there.
That was an excellent explanation, and I really agree with the emphasis on education, and that really is the ground level of this landscape. So we can go into this next section, our final full section, just talking about education, outreach, and what is next for the Psychedelic Pharmacist Foundation and the psychedelic landscape as a whole. So we're gonna go to MG for this one. As education committee lead, what does the PPS educational agenda look like? We've talked a lot about the importance of education. What are the biggest knowledge gaps specifically that you're trying to address? And who is the primary audience? Students, practicing pharmacists, or both?
Thank you for that, Luke. Well, I'll just start off with the overall purpose, I would say, of the Psychedelic Pharmacist Foundation. Really, the educational offerings is to provide evidence-based, culturally sensitive, patient-centered education on psychedelic therapies to pharmacists, but also to healthcare professionals and to the public. So society is really being flooded right now with both the promise and the pushback of psychedelic medicine becoming a reality. So, you know, we've got good 2 decades of research, if we don't count all the stuff that happened back in the 50s, and obviously the indigenous uses, et cetera, and a host of media. But the once stigmatized compounds kind of underwent that psychedelic renaissance with all the hype and the hoopla of the next wonder drug, this time focusing on mental health. But while the initial enthusiasm has kind of marginally waned with that initial FDA rejection of Lykos's MDMA-assisted therapy for PTSD, the genie's kind of been let out of the bottle, so to speak. And the public are now far, far more aware of the potential of these drugs. And localities, as we mentioned, are moving to decriminalize. Foundations are calling for funding and more research. Some states are actually legalizing certain psychedelics. Because they're now in the public sphere, even where illegal, it's imperative that the public, and in particular health professionals, particularly pharmacists, be educated on the mechanisms and the side effects of these psychedelic medications. So, you know, we've talked a little bit about pharmacists being the drug experts. They're kind of the logical and necessary persons of contact for both other health professionals and for the public. So our goal, putting out educational materials to all of these individuals, is really, again, just to be that evidence-based source of materials that you can rely on to be up to date, to be informed, and to not buy into that hoopla or that stigma. Just say, these are the facts. This is what's going on. This is how it can help you. These are the things to look out for. And just kind of getting that out to the public so they know what to expect, and to the pharmacist so they know how to counsel their patients. Personally, for me, I obviously love teaching the student pharmacists because they're the ones going out into this and they are definitely seeing this, but also love teaching the pharmacists who have been out there for a while and are just now understanding this space or coming into this space, discovering it. So this is something that, you know, obviously these drugs have been stigmatized for a long time. So these pharmacists might have even had a little bit of information on this stuff when they were in pharmacy school, and but what they were taught was, this is a substance abuse category, these drugs are bad. And now they actually get to learn the mechanism of action and see where these things could potentially help. So that is kind of bringing lifelong learning into it, I would say. And that lifelong learning doesn't just translate to that pharmacist, it translates to everyone around them.
And that's stigma aspect of it is so huge and under-recognized, I feel like, in so many healthcare sectors, and pharmacists, especially community pharmacists, they are really embedded within their communities. They are really great candidates to beat back that stigma when this is all much more mainstream. So for anyone listening who's interested by all of this and everything they've heard about the psychedelic landscape, what, and specifically our pharmacist audience, what should they actually do? They might be curious about the space, but maybe skeptical or unsure where to start. What's the first step towards getting involved with this community or with the PPA or PPF?
Yeah, I mean, we would definitely encourage people to come check out the PPA website. There you can read our newsletter. You could sign up to take the Breakthrough Psychedelics course to kind of catch up on where the current landscape of the drugs and development are. And, you know, even if you feel so inclined, consider a donation to the newly formed PPF as we launch on June 20th of this year, and just help be part of the movement.
Well said about, you know, contributing to what this is, you know, we're volunteers. You know, we do this because we believe in it and we have a passion for it. You know, we need that community. You know, community support is what's going to continue to drive this. And, you know, having, you know, pharmacists support either through the association or the foundation and education classes really is helping us be able to continue on with this movement and helping, you know, the clients, you know, clients that are out there. And, you know, beyond the financial support, you know, this is a great opportunity to come with your ideas. You know, we're developing, we have committees, we have other needs, you know, that it doesn't have to be time consuming, is that if you have an idea, come with it. If you have a question or even an opposing thought, come with it. That's how we learn, is through this knowledge. And for the overall industry, I think, you know, for pharmacists, is that to learn for either yourself or to learn for, you know, our patients and clients and seekers that are out there, doesn't mean that you have to choose to do it. You know, no is a perfectly acceptable answer. Nobody has to feel like they have to personally do this, you know, in this work. But having the knowledge to, there's no violation with that. Learning, it doesn't mean that you even support psychedelics, but you're supporting the healing that could be going on and then allowing the individual to have it. So yeah, just check out both of our websites and, you know, ask questions, be engaged, you know, learn along with us, you know, be a part of the team that really is, this is going to be a game changer as this continues on for mental health care.
Yeah, I just want to second what both Will and Jason said. Obviously, check out our websites, and particularly if you do have those questions, you know, let us know. What kind of education do you feel like you need? What is missing out there? What do you not have? That's going to kind of drive what we give to you as well, what we can produce. We are volunteers who are very into the space. We're very passionate about it. We are willing to spend our time to go and dig through that evidence and bring it to you and present it to you in a way that you can understand. That's what we're all about. And I would love to do that for you. So please bring me your questions, even if they're controversial, especially if they're controversial, because I kind of love that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have said it better myself. You guys are definitely, you know, an inspiration starting this foundation and really trying to educate the masses and the pharmacy public specifically on the importance of these medications and preparing them for, you know, the future. Basically, this is going to be part of our future. So as we close out this discussion, I wanted to thank you guys again for being here. I've really heard some amazing insights, and I'm sure our audience has as well. So what does success look like, you know, zooming out a little bit, for the Psychedelic Pharmacists Foundation 5 years from now? And what would tell you that this work mattered? We could start with Jason.
The vision that I have is really hearing more from the community around that they learned from their pharmacists. Really having it be something that we're not promoting, that is a natural part that's being filled in with all of the other great organizations that are out there in recovery, end of life psychedelic care, you know, psilocybin assisted therapy association, all of us that are out there and advocating for communities, is to be hearing that their involvement, and then it becomes something that we're not driving, that it's a natural thing, that when we're talking about, you know, what I would love to see is that when we're talking about, hey, healthcare and so, you know, psychedelics for health and whatnot, is that then it's just naturally, oh yeah, let's be sure that we have our pharmacist there, going through there. And then, you know, membership goals are just really seeing, you know, MG being in the teaching spaces, this can be something that, you know, really could be an integral part of the regular communications and regular education, that this could be a part of what's coming up in the pharmaceutical, you know, companies, is that they're learning about this. Those are the outcomes, you know, that I see, and always feel like that we get to the point when anybody, you know, professionals can be like, oh, this isn't for me, but it might be right for you. This could really help you, you know, within your appropriate scope of practice. Like, that's what we need from the industry to really keep everything going.
Yeah, for me, I would say it's kind of two-pronged, is to kind of reducing that stigma by having that evidence-based education out there, and having, you know, my students not be afraid to come and talk to me about these, having other pharmacists not be afraid to bring this up and say, hey, I would like to learn more about this, or I need to know more about this, or my patient came to me with this and I didn't know how to respond, or I did, even better, I knew how to respond because I watched this, or I took this course, or I looked at this infographic that you guys provided. So things like that. So reducing the stigma around it just in general, but particularly among healthcare professionals, and also somewhere for my students to go. If we are in on the ground floor and we are included in the guidelines and whatever this looks like going forward as an actual medicine, that the pharmacists are truly involved and that there is, you know, a career path for those pharmacists who do want to go into that right away or want to go into it a little bit later in their profession. That would be awesome for me.
And Will, you can close us out.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I completely agree with what my colleague said on this topic. I think, to put it most succinctly from my perspective, when we see real patients being helped by these therapies in the real world and pharmacists are participating meaningfully in that continuum of care, we will know that we've been successful.
Yeah, 100%. Well, thank you guys again for taking this time to have this very insightful discussion. I really appreciated being able to learn myself more about the PPA and the PPF, and I hope our listeners also were able to gather a lot about what is coming in this landscape and what they should know as the momentum continues. And it's, like I said in the beginning, it's having a real moment in the United States right now, and it's catching up to the rest of the world. And we're going to see a lot of continued momentum in the future. So thank you, Jason, MG, Will. I really appreciate the time. Once again, you could check our links in the bio, or you can go to the PPA and PPF websites, and you can check out all the resources that they have available there. You could also follow Jason, MG, and Will on LinkedIn or any other social platform. And yeah, you can just, I encourage you all to take some time, learn more about the PPF and the psychedelic landscape as a whole, because it's, the momentum is continuing and it's only going to become more prevalent throughout our healthcare community. So thank you guys again. I really appreciate it. And thank you all for listening to this episode of Pharmacy Focus. See you next time.
Thank you, Luke.
Thanks, Luke.